Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Y'all, what's up? What's up? Yeah, checking in. 1, 2, 3, 4 with a mic check. What's going on, folks? We are here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio through the MRN Broadcasting Channel. The number to dial in to speak live is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on cue. You'll be able to talk in live on the show. Pretty much have a show packed with news today, news and announcements over what's going on through the week in the sport of boxing. A couple of matches have been put together, been pretty much announced and official, including one that was announced earlier today in reference to the heavyweight division. So we will be going over that, among other things. So we'll get right into that in a bit. But first, we'll run a commercial and then get on the topics for today. All right, so we will be right back here in a moment.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch other callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes.
No, I didn't.
Okay, black. Okay, black. Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up. I'll wait.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcast Network.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
Okay, folks, we are back here on the Boxing Source Radio Show. Live, number to dial in once again is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on cue and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. Pretty much going to get into it here right now. In reference to boxing talk, as I said, there really wasn't any matches going on over the weekend, so we'll pretty much be covering what's going on in the sport of boxing. And first thing that we're going to go over is the announcement that was pretty much given by Eddie Hearn of Matchroom Boxing and among others, including the fighters that are involved. We have coming up on April 9th, we will have the defense of the IBF Heavyweight Championship as the newly crowned IBF Heavyweight Champion, Charles Martin, who is undefeated and gained the IBF Championship over Czar Glaskov last month over at the Barclays Center. He will be fighting the young British former gold medalist Anthony Joshua, who is another undefeated prospect who pretty much has built a kind of a buzz over the past year, year and a half. And folks are saying that he may be the real deal. They were talking about he was going to be a heavyweight champion real soon. They didn't necessarily think that he would get a title shot this early. They were waiting until 2017, projecting him to fight for a heavyweight title in 2017. But this was something that was kind of in the works, I guess, after Charles Martin won the IBF championship. Anthony Joshua is a highly ranked contender, not only within the IBF, but within the WBC as well. We have spoken about the WBC having Anthony Joshua as the number two contender, right under Alexander Povetkin for Deontay Wilder's WBC belt. And in the IBF, he is the number four contender in those rankings for the championship that Charles Martin had. As we know, we have Vyacheslav Glaskov that used to be the number one contender for the IBF, and that Tyson Fury was the former champion when he won it against Vladimir Klitschko. But immediately after that fight between Fury and Klitschko, there was a rematch clause that was involved, and with that rematch clause, Vyacheslav Glaskov exercised his number one contendership immediately after that, and the IBF granted it. So with the IBF granting it, it was either Tyson Fury would have to ditch that rematch against Vladimir Klitschko to fight Glaskov or give up the belt. And he basically just gave up the belt, so which vacated it. And, well, you have that fight between Martin and Glaskov for that vacant IBF belt. And we saw what happened there when it was pretty much a filling out process in the first two rounds between those two. And then all of a sudden in the third round, Glaskov injured his knee and had a torn ACL and meniscus on his knee and was unable to continue. And all of a sudden you have Charles Martin as your IBF heavyweight champion. So Charles Martin says, well, I mean, I'm the champion, and I want to fight the best. And, well, here we go. Instead of, you know, having one of those so-called voluntary defenses against guys that aren't necessarily within the top four or five within the rankings, he goes right after somebody that's within, I would say, the top three or four. As right now, currently, the IBF does not have anybody as a number one or number two contender there for the IBF. Those are both vacant. So right under that, they have Erkan Tepper. And then below that is Anthony Joshua. So Anthony Joshua right there at number four, a young prospect there that's had only 15 fights. Recently, won in the O2 Arena against Dylan White, who was a rival there in the amateurs that was able to defeat Anthony Joshua in the amateurs, but in the professional ranks was knocked out So Joshua is still undefeated there. So this is going to be a big fight there on April 9th over at the O2 Arena. It's most likely going to be on Showtime during the afternoon, since it's going to be in London with the time difference. We know that in Las Vegas on April 9th, the main event in there is for the version of the WBO Welterweight Championship between Manny Pacquiao and Timothy Bradley. So we're going to have a near doubleheader of sorts as far as pay-per-view cards are concerned. I'm not sure if this will be a Showtime pay-per-view event, but they will have it on pay-per-view overseas in Britain. So we'll have those two big fights going on in April 9th, and that's going to be a pretty big matchup. I've seen a little bit from Anthony Joshua, and I've seen a little bit of Charles Martin even before the fight that I attended at Barclays. I feel that Anthony Joshua is a very skilled fighter. He did have a little bit of issues against Dillon White, which I think some people may have expected because of his previous issues with Dillon White in the amateurs. But he was able to adjust to that and be able to eventually, like I said, knock him out later on in the fight. And there with Charles Martin, I've seen him in a couple of fights before his fight against Sahar Glasskov, and he was able to show a few skills here and there, but didn't really have a lot of, guys that were there with equilibrium experience or equal experience that could give a comparison to Anthony Joshua. Now, they have fought one fighter, similar, and I think that was Rafael Zadano Love, and both of those fights they were able to beat, of course, by technical knockout. But other than that, I would say that Anthony Joshua has had pretty much a better resume, even though he's had less fights. He's only had 15 professional fights under his docket. But with the last few that he's had, he's been able to show himself against, I would say, better competition. I was looking him up actually a few hours ago in reference to the resume that that he had. And I would say the last fights that Anthony Joshua had were, like I said, against undefeated Dillon White, Gary Cornish, who was also undefeated, and a veteran in Kevin Johnson. And I saw that fight against Kevin Johnson at the O2 Arena. And Kevin Johnson, I think, was a fighter that was very rugged, but had been tough and, had never been knocked out. Very rugged fighter, rugged veteran. He did go up against the likes of Tesoro, Emmanuel Char, and also Christian Cameron, who were in Tyson Fury 2. And none of those guys were able to knock out Kevin Johnson, but Anthony Joshua was able to do that. So I think that kind of gave a little bit more buzz to what was happening with the whole thing behind Anthony Joshua and him as a young prospect in the heavyweight division. But we But I still would say that, you know, he should have a definite advantage in this fight against against Charles Martin here. So it's going to be interesting how this fight is going to iron itself out. We have like other talks in reference to Charles Martin as, you know, what his next fight was going to be immediately after he won the IBF title against Art Glaskov. And we were talking about on this show that he may be going up against Deontay Wilder, who is the WBC champion. But since this is, you know, now signed, that opens things up, I would say, for Deontay Wilder to fight Alexander Povetkin for the WBC championship. And now he's looking like he's interested in making that fight happen. So I'm kind of glad that's going to be more of something that's going to be put together. So we'll see if that fight irons itself out. They're trying to see if they can start up negotiations in reference to that, and that and then we'll see, like, if they're going to be able to lock that down, or if it's going to go to purse bid. Pretty much I'm seeing that it may not go to purse bid, that they may try to keep that thing ironed out as soon as possible so that it doesn't go to purse bid, and the potential of the fight being in Russia doesn't happen. We'll be talking about that potential fight later on here in the show. Getting back to the upcoming fight that was announced here between Charles Martin and Anthony Joshua, do have my comments that are coming here as I'm looking at Dan Rayfield's article here on ESPN.com. Charles Martin here is pretty much saying that he's willing to fight the best, and he says here that he told his team that he wanted to fight the best challengers possible, or the best challenger possible, for his first defense, and that Anthony Joshua's name was being mentioned a lot. So he said, he's pretty much saying, like, well, if they're talking about Anthony Joshua, then why not defend the title against Anthony Joshua? And on top of that, he says that, you know, that he was going to go to the UK to make a statement that he is the best heavyweight out there and no one has taken the title. Says he's the world champion. So that doesn't mean that he's going to sit back and make easy defenses in the U.S. It says it means facing the biggest challenges out there. He respects Anthony Joshua and everything that he's accomplished, but he says on April 9th that Joshua is getting knocked out. I kind of see it being fairly interesting that he's saying that he doesn't want to sit back and make, you know, easy or voluntary title defenses in the United States and facing the biggest challenges out there. It's like I said, Anthony Joshua is a top five contender within the IBF heavyweight championship thing there. So, another specific champion has had a couple of title defenses that have been fairly voluntary. not necessarily within the top five of the rankings. And I guess there was kind of a little jab there against one of these other heavyweight title holders. But I give props to Charles Martin to by defending his IBF championship this early and against somebody with the likes of Anthony Joshua 3 months after he's won the heavyweight championship. So that's going to be something of note that we're going to watch out for in the O2 Arena. I wonder what other matches that they're going to put together here in order to fill out this card, as Eddie Hearn is also a manager of Kell Brook and Billy Joe Saunders, among others. And Kell Brook already has a fight coming up, too. So we'll see if he's going to be able to put a few other matchups there for this card here on April 9th to kind of like get some of the boxing fans overseas and also here in the U.S. interested in that type of card. So we're going to see what happens here with that. Real quick, number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key, you'll be able to get on cue and talk live on the show. Just real quick here on other news that is, you know, happening. Of course, we talked about a little thing here and there last week about what was going on between Andre Ward and Sullivan Barrera and how that fight hadn't really been signed yet, but now the day after I was talked about on the show here last week, they finalized the contract for Andre Ward to fight Sullivan Barrera in the Oracle Arena on March 26th. We're pretty much going to see that fight happening here in about 6 weeks or so. And it gives a little bit of we'll see a little bit more out of Andre Ward in this fight, in that I think he's going to get the guy that's a little bit, you know, a little bit more skilled, has like a, you know, a Cuban background, amateur type of background that might, you know, frustrate Andre Ward a little bit in the first few rounds or so. I mean, we know a lot about these Cuban boxers, that they are very skilled and, you know, have a lot of abilities that have been able to fluster a lot of, you know, guys inside the ring. I mean, we know about the notable Cuban boxers that are out there, such as Guillermo Rigondeaux and the quote-unquote American Dream, Erislandy Lara. And of course, you have the ever-dangerous Luis Ortiz, who has a fight coming up here in the Washington, D.C. area on March 5th. So, as we see that we have all of these Cuban contenders out there, we'll see how Andre Ward fares against Sullivan Barrera in this fight on March 26th, and see if he's somebody that fills out into the frame of a light heavyweight, which is the 175-pound weight limit, or if he, you know, kind of falls still within that super middleweight type of thing. If he comes in around a, you know, 170-pound weight, the day before the fight, and then kind of like gets himself up to a certain weight. Because as we know, they're planning to have him go up against Sergey Kovalev late in 2016. And Sergey Kovalev is pretty much a guy that fills out to being an actual, you know, light heavyweight. And I think with RJ Ward, he would have to make a good number of adjustments to kind of like keep off somebody like a Sergey Kovalev, because Kovalev is a true light heavyweight. I mean, they pretty much, you know, put Kovalev at right below the right below the 175-pound weight limit. But I think that RJ Ward has the skill to defeat a guy like Sergey Kovalev. So, man, they have a few people that kind of agree with that, such as light heavyweight Bernard Hopkins and the commentator Max Kellerman say that they kind of picked RJ Ward to defeat Kovalev. But first, before that fight even goes now, we'll be seeing RJ Ward going up against Sullivan Pereira. And in the meantime, like I said, I guess Kovalev will have another stay busy fight, probably probably around May or June or so. As I think Kathy Duval is trying to get a fight with him being in Russia. But here with RJ Ward, I would say that, you know, he's trying to, you know, get himself up and out there. He tried to fight twice in 2015, but was unable to with knee issues coming up, you know, around September, October, because he was trying to fight sometime in November, pretty much around that November 21st card that involved Cotto and Canelo, but he was having knee problems then, and so he had to kind of back out of that. And also had a fight that was potentially proposed, but kind of was rejected by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. So now he has something here where he's approved to fight Sullivan Pereira at the Oracle Arena in Oakland, you know, another hometown fight there. So we're pretty much going to see how he's going to look there in reference to that. So that's going to be something that we're going to wait on and see if Ward is able to be either big enough to kind of handle light heavyweights or skilled enough to adjust to a guy like Sullivan Pereira, who's, you know, a young prospect, but a fairly good fighter there, with a few fights under his belt, as he is there at 17 wins without any losses. So we'll get into a break here, and then we'll be back talk about the fight between Scott Quigg and Frampton. So we'll be back here on the Boxing Source Radio Show, live on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey all, this is Matthew Long, the Executioner, here on the Cold Hard Truth on Sports.
Now, I know you've heard me talk about the Touch Pro Basketball on my shows before. My boy, Tony Greer, is the inventor of the ball. If you're out there training and playing basketball and you don't have this ball, you're missing out. Because it's going to help you improve your hand-eye coordination, your dribbling, and your shooting skills. So go today and get the Touch Pro Basketball at TouchProBall.com.
Sports radio host, producer, news anchor. A few of many, many more careers that the Connecticut School of Broadcasting can lead you to. Go CSB.com or 1-800-TV-RADIO to schedule your studio tour. With an on-hands approach and instructors being broadcast professionals themselves, you're guaranteed to get a first-class learning experience. Get your career in the broadcasting field started the right way. Sports radio host, producer, news anchor. The Connecticut School of Broadcasting. Go CSB.com or 1-800-TV-RADIO to schedule your studio tour.
Executioner here.
Now, I'm sure a lot of you listeners are just like me. You like to spend a little time on the internet, sharing video, looking at video, but the problem is you can't stream live if you're playing on Tumblr or YouTube. Well, if you go right now to Giesel.net, you can sign up for your free account and start streaming live and share that with all of your friends. That's Giesel.net, GEALZ.net.
Why haven't you learned anything?
For sports news, updates, and general tomfoolery, head on over to thechtonsports.wordpress.com.
Gotta be careful, though. We don't want it to get too excited and go off in your hair.
All right, what's going on here, folks? We are back live on the Fox Source Radio Show. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. Coming back here, we do have another upcoming fight that's in the month of February that is a very notable fight between two guys in the super bantamweight division that will have two super bantamweight championships on the line, the IBF and the WBA. Super bantamweight championships on the line is Scott Quigg will be going up against Carl Frampton on the United Kingdom there in Manchester, in the Manchester Arena. And here we have two undefeated guys there, one from the Lincolnshire area, and Scott Quigg, and the other one, Carl Frampton, who is from Northern Iowa, the Belfast. And it's one of those fights that is, you know, a key matchup there in the super bantamweight division against two guys that are pretty much the best in that weight class, and also two guys that are, you know, within the same area that, you know, kind of sets up a local rivalry type of feel within the sport of boxing. And in the UK, they kind of like have those type of things where they'll match up guys that are, you know, from two different areas within Britain or within Ireland, somewhere within that region of the United Kingdom. And that kind of like sets up an atmosphere, a great atmosphere for fights, and this one here will be a very good fight between two super bantamweights. Real quick, we got someone calling in, 813-758. What's going on with you?
Jay Beasy, what's going on? This is Terrell calling from Tampa. How's everything?
Doing good there, Brother Terrell. Doing good. I think I'm kind of getting, I don't know if it's allergies or something like that, but I guess they have another snowstorm coming in, so all that cold air is kind of like getting to me, but still continuing here with this show.
Okay, I guess you guys are talking about the Frampton Quick Fight, right?
Yeah, that fight here is coming up, you know, in a couple of weeks. That'll be in Manchester Arena. And, yeah, like I was saying, with two guys that are kind of, you know, either if both are in Britain or one's from Britain and one's from Ireland, that kind of, like, makes for a great atmosphere for the fight. And I think that Eddie Hearn, who, you know, I kind of, like, mentioned earlier with that announcement of Anthony Joshua and Charles Martin, Eddie Hearn is known for making pretty good fights over there in the England area between two local guys that, you know, kind of like gets those local rivalries out there and starting those up, and makes for pretty good fights and pretty good atmospheres. And I think that'll be the same here between when you have Scott Quigg going up against Carl Frampton.
Yeah, one thing that is interesting about the English arena, Irish arena, because everyone already knows that you have the political background and backdrop between those two countries that have been going on for years and years, which certainly creates interest for fighters in that region.
Mm-hmm.
But one small note aside from that, a question for you. Who is the last great English fighter that had that cross-continental, appeal? You can go back to what's my guy's name from the welterweight division, Junior Welters, what's his name? Goodness. He fought Pacquiao and Mayweather.
Before Mayweather?
Ricky Hatton. Yeah, Ricky Hatton. Ricky was able to come over here and get a follow in this country. And, of course, when he came over to fight Mayweather, he had that big draw that came over to support him in Vegas and everything.
Yep.
And even before Ricky Hatton, probably the most popular guy of the last 10 to 20 years, I would say, would have been Ahmed Jr., Ahmed and everything. What's my man name from the cruiserweight division that fought in the Super 6 tournament? Forgot his name, but he's retired now. What's his name? Andre would be
that call for
Brock. But it's interesting with the English arena, because, like, you know, those guys usually fight for, like, I forgot the name. They're sanctioned titles, but usually like a European belt, stuff like that, that people within that region fight for. I think it was a guy named from Italy, I can't think of this guy's name for nothing. I think Malignaggi fought him once. Giancarlo Bruntini, something like that. The point I'm trying to make is, like, sometimes the American public can just kind of seem here when there's so much other stuff going on here in the world scene.
Mm-hmm.
I just read an article today where Nonino Daenerys' upcoming fight, say he wants to make a good, strong performance, and they had a comment on there from some other boxers, and they had some guy, I forgot the guy's name, but he's supposedly the Filipino boxing other year or something like that. I've never heard of this guy. But what's funny, all I'm saying, we tend to forget that there's boxing everywhere else, you know, and whether that be in England, in Asia, Thailand, China, Japan, there's boxing everywhere else. And you know what? Just as we got a Bob Arum here, there's an Eddie Hearn, there's a Bob Arum overseas too. People like Eddie Hearn, stuff like that, you know. So it's very interesting to see them continue the sport of boxing and just move it forward and be relevant in the sport as well and put on good fights.
Yeah, I mean, boxing is a world sport. And, you know, if if you're really like a good follower of boxing, you'll see that, you know, not only is stuff, you know, happening in England, and as you've, you know, mentioned, you know, somebody like Donito Donaire, who's, you know, trying to get an upcoming fight here in the Philippines to defend his version of title. You know, they've had stuff going on in Macau, China, of course, with Bob Arum, and a few of these fights of the year winners that have happened over the past 5 or 6 years have happened overseas against guys that, you know, that are pretty much fighting in Japan or, you know, maybe in the Philippines or Korea. And so, you know, having these fights in Germany and Poland and in England, you kind of like see how the overall fight scene is overseas and how they kind of like take a liking or take an adoption to the sport and how they really get behind their fighters and how it's much different than the fighters that we have here in the States, that you really don't have anybody out there that's American that a lot of people get behind in comparison. And this was, you know, like one of the first few shows that we've had on here is how we kind of like seen how a lot of these guys that are Olympians, I mean, we've had Andre Ward, we've had Floyd Mayweather, we've had, you know, other guys like that, you know, pretty much kind of like popular here and there, but don't get the overall support that these other guys that have been in the Olympics or have built themselves as a professional boxer overseas.
And even what's interesting about, without going into great detail right now about the Charles Martin Joshua fight, once again, like I said, the point about how you had a number of English fighters that have come over here to this country and gained appeal. But just look at Joshua, for example, Olympian size, fighting style. It would suggest that he could come up here and be a star, you know. Of course, with Charles Martin fight, that's really going to set the stage, yay or nay, for him, you know. And even for Charles Martin himself, I mean, if he used to go over there and get a decisive win over Joshua in his backyard, I mean, that could definitely make him a star as well. So like I said, the world stage is there, and people just need to remember that this is a world sport, you know.
As I was talking about that Martin Joshua fight earlier, and how it's something that could definitely put Charles Martin in the eyes and thoughts of a lot of boxing fans that are out there that really haven't necessarily seen Charles Martin even before that Showtime fight against Sar Glasgow. Not that many people really heard about him. I mean, we hadn't really heard about him before that fight. So in comparison to an Anthony Joshua, who, you know, kind of had that, you know, background by winning the super heavyweight division in the Olympics and, you know, kind of like getting a couple of, you know, kind of notable fights in those last few fights. His, you know, win against Dylan White, you know, who beat him in the amateurs, but Joshua was able to knock him out here in the professional ranks. And among other guys, like one guy that he was able to knock out who had never been stopped by anybody, including Tyson Fury, as I mentioned earlier, kind of like, you know, raised a few eyebrows outside of the United Kingdom. So I think with this fight here, kind of like says, well, Charles Martin is, you know, really willing and ready to go, you know. So I think we will be getting back to that in a little bit. But back to this Frampton and Quick thing. How do you see that fight kind of shaping out?
Well, it's going to be a very interesting regional fight. I'm glad to reap off the point about the world boxing. which one of these guys had a deal to fight, not necessarily a deal, but does an offer in place to fight, what's the Cuban's name?
Rigo?
Yeah. Wasn't it Frampton? Which one was supposed to fight?
Yeah, I think it was Frampton.
I forgot why that fight didn't happen, but like we were talking about before, just with the chance for to come and have an intercontinental appeal, it was really a disappointment that fight did not happen. But because win or lose or whatever, he could have gained an audience here and probably would have gotten some more fights on networks here, you know, and had his name just be out there more. But like I said, at this point, it's now reduced to a more regional fight. It's going to be very interesting to see who wins that. Is it for a belt, or what is it for?
They have the WBA and IBF Super Bantamweight Championship, so it's a unification fight.
Okay, great. Money on the line.
Yeah, so it's a pretty high profile fight in that division, and with them two being, you know, amongst the top three within that division, kind of like, you know, irons things out as far as like who's alongside Rigondeaux as the best in that division.
Well, I certainly look forward to it, and once again, like I state all the time, it really helps to figure out the landscape of boxing. Regardless of weight class, we need these fights to happen, so we can look forward to future fights and hopefully continue to match up the best with the best that everyone always wants to see, regardless of where the fight is from and everything. So.
Yep. Yeah. In this case here, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, they kind of have Frampton rated. I think some people have Frampton rated over Scott Quigg, and some may have it the other way around. But for some reason, I'm kind of favoring. I'm kind of leaning towards Quigg a little bit, and I'm not sure why. I mean, his experience is kind of like maybe a little bit of an advantage. He's fought, you know, both of them have fought Kiko Martinez, and he's fought a good number of veterans, you know, coming up in the ranks before he was able to, you know, win the WBA version of the Super Bantamweight Championship. But I'm kind of like leaning towards him as far as like winning this particular fight. And I think that with it being in the United Kingdom, he's going to have a lot of his fans there backing him, as you know, it's going to be pretty much around his hometown there in the Lincolnshire area of the UK. So he'll have a huge backing for that fight. And, I think it's going to be something that he's going to be looking forward to kind of like a step up type of fight there. So I kind of like favor him to win this one, but we will see in the next couple of weeks how that fight will shape itself out. Looking here among, you know, other news that's going on, we did know about, you know, the Golovkin fight that's coming up in April 23rd against Dominic Wade. And now we basically have the regular fighter on Golovkin's undercard. Will be there once again, Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez, who is, you know, universally regarded as the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the sport today, will be, you know, on that card yet again. He's going up against a guy in McWilliams Arroyo, who is a regular veteran there within the division, but Arroyo hasn't necessarily been in the ring for about a year, and while it seems like it'll be a, you know, kind of a good test for Chuck Latito Gonzalez, with Arroyo not having that, you know, ring experience in, within a year, and also being a guy that's, you know, guy that may be a little bit up there in age, I'm not necessarily sure if that's going to be something to where he'll have that much of a shot against Roman Gonzalez. I mean, Roman Gonzalez is a very, like I said, is a very active fighter. 44 fights under his belt. He has been in the sport, you know, around, you know, over 10 years or so. But like I said, 44 fights, 44 wins. Has a string of TKO victories lasting, you know, back in since 2013. And, you know, with Arroyo, who's, like I said, hasn't been active for a year, that isn't necessarily good against somebody with the likes of Roman Gonzalez. So what's your initial thoughts about Gonzalez taking this fight against Arroyo?
Well, the key thing, like I said, this is your classic, in a sense, veteran versus a solid champion right now. Typically, you would see a young champion like this take on other people within the top three of his class, whether regardless of belt and stuff like that. But it, I mean, this plus, I'd rather see a fight like this rather than when Danny Garcia fought Horacio. I think that was last year, for like a quote-unquote stay busy fight. I don't want to see that. So I'm glad to see Chocolatito take on a solid veteran. I mean, I'm like I said, on paper, you expect to know what he's going to do, and you don't expect for his opponent to just lay down. That's not going to happen. This guy's been fighting for a long time. He has a name as far as in regards to Arroyo. But, I mean, for me, this is all about Chocolatito continuing on his dominance. I've already been very impressed with him. I already have. But even more so in this last fight when he fought Brian Valoria. I mean, I've always been a Valoria fan for a long time, throughout his ups and downs and stuff like that in the sport. His last, when they fought last, Valoria said he was in the best shape of his life. And, you know, he went in, he bought it to him. He bought it to Chocolatito, you know. It was a great fight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he ended up getting knocked down in the end. But, I mean, once again, this is all about Chocolatito and this fight going forward and him just continuing on his dominance. I mean, this guy's, for a lightweight, small weight class, this guy's a beast. This guy is the way he punches from all angles and the power he brings at his class is just simply amazing. Amazing.
And he's, you know, he's become like, you know, a three-division champion. I mean, he came up from the smallest weight to get to where he is right now, and like now he's like really coming up as like a, you know, a fierce opponent or a fierce guy that, you know, kind of like really gets his punches out there in bunches, as they like to say, and like you said, in various angles that, you know, really frustrate his opponents. And so he was able to break down by Brian Valoria near the end of that fight there in Madison Square Garden and get that technical knockout. But I think that this is something to where, you know, Gonzalez is in a stay busy fight against a veteran like Arroyo. And I think what it's going to try to set up is another rematch between him and Juan Francisco Estrada, who holds like two of the other titles within that weight class, and they fought to pretty much a very good fight a few years ago, back in 2012, where Gonzalez was able to get a unanimous decision against him. So a lot of people are, you know, talking about both of those guys going up against each other yet again sometime. They're trying to see if it's for sometime this year. Is, you know, Gonzalez has had that had the WBC flyweight title, and you know, Estrada was able to get the WBA and WBO flyweight titles, so they're able to make a rematch between those two. It'll be a very, very big fight, and if possible, if they're able to make that fight between Canelo and Golovkin on HBO, and they really wanted to make it a big pay-per-view, then not only have that fight, then have this rematch between Gonzalez and Estrada, and that will make for a super, super pay-per-view card.
I certainly would agree with that as well. That would be definitely outstanding, especially in this shrinking market of pay-per-view fights. These guys, the promoters, they have to put on great fights instead of putting on crap cards, one top fight and a crap fights on other ones that people just simply don't want to see, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, just like I said, just that once again, just a market of pay-per-view. What pay-per-views do we have coming up this year? We got Con Canelo's going to be pay-per-view.
Con Canelo. You got you know, Pac Bradley 3 is pay-per-view. I'm trying to see if – I'm going to go back to Golovkin because they're not putting that one on pay-per-view. And I thought that they were going to. I think that was going to be one of their guarantees, but I guess after this fight against David Lemieux, they're kind of like pulling that back a little bit. So that's just going to be an HBO telecast. But yeah, that's going to be pay per view, and I was wishing that this one against Porter would be pay-per-view, but it's not going to be. And I think that is kind of like a that's going to be actually a plus for a lot of fans, because things are, you know, kind of like ironing itself out for that particular fight card. And that it would have kind of been a pay-per-view type of card, but or even a Showtime card, but it's not. And it kind of ends up as a win for the fans to see a couple of these fights there that's going to be pretty much just on CBS instead of on, you know, a Showtime pay-per-view card.
Well, I'll tell you what, just let me ask you a couple questions. Do you think Pacquiao Bradley 3 should be pay-per-view? And if so, how many buys do you think that would do?
I can't, to me, because I'm going at this as a fan. I don't think it should be pay-per-view, but because the other two were pay-per-view fights, this one here is. And the only reason that it is pay-per-view is because Manny Pacquiao is in it. If it was anybody else against Timothy Bradley, it would not be a pay-per-view fight. It doesn't matter who it would be against. Even though Bradley is kind of like talking about fighting guys as big as Canelo and Golovkin, those fights would not be pay-per-view level fights because of the overall appeal of Timothy Bradley. And even though Bradley is a very skilled guy, has one of the best resumes in the sport, he doesn't have close to the draw of many of the other fighters that have been within his divisions, you know, compared to like the likes of Floyd Mayweather or even Amir Khan or something like that. He doesn't bring that type of appeal. So, yeah, I see it being as a pay-per-view. But like I said, it's only because of Pacquiao. And as far as like the number of pay-per-view buys, man, that's going to be tough. I mean, we're still getting growing resentment towards this fight being put together. And I'm really not seeing what, you know, what other things are kind of being seen at as far as like the undercard. I mean, they have the Super Middleweight Championship on the line in the undercard, a couple of minor championships on the line, but nobody, you know, really notable for this card. So even if it reaches like a million pay-per-view buys, that'll pretty much be it. It can't get, I don't think it'll get higher than a million. Not even 1.5. I don't see it.
Yeah, you know, I would be very surprised if it got to 1 million. And just the reason I'm saying that, due to the length of time that Pacquiao last fought, that was last year against Mayweather, his performance in that fight, which was definitely lackluster from his part. And the fact of he's fighting Bradley again, which wasn't a high customer demand for that fight, but they took that anyway. And I would love to have been in the drawing room to see on the projected path for each potential opponent. Like, for example, what was Pacquiao's trajectory against a Crawford versus a Bradley? You know, I would love to see those notes on that, you know. But like we talked about before in the past, with the advent of the PBC taking a share of the landscape of boxing, the pay-per-view market is shrinking because, once for one, these guys are signed to Al Heyman. They're going to remain loyal to Al Heyman, and Heyman's going to put those guys on TV, regular TV and everything. So really,
yeah,
the ability of these promoters to put on quality cards on pay-per-view cards, the pay-per-view market is shrinking up. It really is. And they really going to have to dig deep to put on some quality fights that people want to see. I mean, it'll be great to see, like, your boy J-Rock get on the pay-per-view card. That can launch him, you know? But it's just a shame that people are sitting out there like that, and we don't see fights like that on pay-per-view, considering the fact that this is a shrinking pay-per-view market. So, like I said, I mean, you look at the number of pay-per-view fights this year, it's a hard stretch. And it's funny because, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you know you're going to have 2, 3, 4 solid pay-per-view fights a year. The Puerto Rican Day Parade in June, stuff like that, whether it be a Cotto, Cinco de Mayo, Labor Day was always a locked-in pay-per-view date. November, there was also a locked-in pay-per-view date, and that was tradition 4 or 5 years ago. And you really can't – it's funny, for the first time in a long time, you really can't say that, you know? So
they kind of like laid over from last year, as, you know, everybody knew about, you know, this thing with Mayweather and Pacquiao, but when Mayweather pretty much was saying that he was retiring, you know, after, you know, his fights in 2015, they pretty much were trying to look at, you know, who would kind of headline those particular dates. I mean, like you said, like in May and September, like you said, you have, you know, Puerto Rican Day week, the weekend of the Puerto Rican Day Parade around June. You still have Miguel Cotto that's still out there. But, you know, as far as these other guys, who will be the other people that will step up and take over for that pay-per-view scene? Because you really didn't, you know, necessarily have that many pay-per-view cards out there. Like I said, last year, you really didn't have as much cards on HBO itself, which kind of like eventually led to the departure of their sports director that they had there. So now they're trying to see what they can do on HBO, and the new guy that's out there is saying that he's you know, saying they have no limitations to who's the promoters or who's the managers or anything like that. We're opening the door for everybody to fight everybody on HBO because, you know, it was kind of like a bad situation for them. So now they're trying to see if they can open up the doors for anybody and everybody to fight on HBO. And I think part of that is kind of why they have this thing here with Golovkin and Dominic Wade, with Dominic Wade being managed by Al Heyman currently. So I think that's like kind of a start to things to open itself up on HBO to see if HBO can once again become the spotlight premium network for the sport of boxing.
Well, one fight that you mentioned in regards to this conversation now, Thurman Porter. Privately, don't you think those guys have suffered from, well, I'm not going to say Porter, but someone like a Thurman that we railed from time to time again on the show. In the past 3-4 years, whether it be Thurman, whoever else that wanted to try to get the Mayweather fight, and there was reluctance to fight other top fighters and for fights that were right there. Now, from 2-3 years ago when Thurman Reed came up and got to his pinnacle where he's at right now, if he would have fought like a Porter or anybody in the top 10 of the welterweight division and won those fights, and even if he would have been in some wars, so what? If he would have won those fights, the position he would be in right now, think about that for him. He would definitely he'd be set to be the pay-per-view star. He would be set.
Yeah. Yeah, he would have been the number one guy already. And the thing is, he wouldn't have had to fight. Like, he could have fought Sean Porter, and he wouldn't have had to fight guys like Kell Brook or Amir Khan. So he could have had that British market, you know, separate and kept that away from him. And he could have probably fought, you know, a couple of other guys. He probably could have gotten that thing, that little bug of Errol Spence Jr. out of the way. And he may have been able to set up something where if he would have gotten all those fights done and Garcia was able to just handle his business like he's done right now and won the WBC championship, then they would have had a title unification fight on a pay-per-view right now. That would have been, you know, probably one of the biggest fights that they could have within that division. But he kind of like, you know, Thurman kind of like went his own way and, you know, took these voluntary defenses of the WBA Super World Welterweight Championship, you know, that's the kind of terminology or whatever it is they kind of call it. But he probably would have had, you know, at least one or two of those belts before this year and would have had a lot more buzz than he's having right now. But the way that he's handled himself, the way that, you know, public, you know, he's handled PR over the past year and a half, now, you know, more and more people are kind of buying into Sean Porter getting to him in this upcoming fight on March 12th. People are saying that in amateurs or in the sparring sessions that Porter was really able to get to Thurman. So that's probably why they kind of were reluctant to actually make that fight. But as you said, now with Mayweather retiring, now we're going to see more of these, you know, more of these fights between these guys in the welterweight division that kind of like irons itself out, and you see who is really the best within that welterweight division now.
Yeah, I mean, really, I think everyone would agree that the welterweight division is the glory division of boxing right now. I mean, with the fights that can be made, from fighters of different places, throwing Khan in there. I mean, I know he's fighting Canelo. He's still a name in there. With his backing from England, the welterweight definitely the glory division right now, and should be for the foreseeable future. I think you agree to that, right?
And I'm looking at, you know, all of these guys that are within the welterweight division. I mean, you got a good number of guys that are, you know, still undefeated, or those that, you know, only have one or two losses to their record that, you know, are all there within that same weight class that could, you know, that could basically fight each other. And I know that we have something coming up with Saddam Ali and Jesse Vargas on March 5th that, you know, gets one of those, I would say, interim WBO welterweight championships. But with the exception of that, I mean, you still have five or six guys within that top 10 or 12 that can fight each other to iron themselves out, iron out the division.
No. Hey, James.
So I'm like kind of looking at that. Huh?
Where's our normal callers at for the show? Haven't seen him in the last couple weeks.
Oh, you mean like Greg or Mike?
Right.
I'm not sure about Mike, but he was talking with Greg earlier today, so I don't know. I mean, I think he's had like a schedule change over the past few weeks or so. So he hasn't been able to, get on over the past few weeks. Like he's only been on for that one time since then. He's pretty much going to be back in the scene soon enough. We'll probably be linking up for that card, that Thurman Porter card on March 12th because, that's something to where, I kind of like made a side wager with Mike on that particular fight because he's back in Keith Thurman while I'm back in Sean Porter. So that's going to be interesting to see how that's going to, end as that day after, we're pretty much going to have the show that day after, too. So it's going to be interesting.
Definitely.
But you were talking about the thing with Julian J. Ross Williams, and they're having this little feature card on Showtime, which has a good number of fighters from Philly. That'll be on March 5th. That's going up against that HBO card that's here in D.C. With Luis Ortiz against Tony Thompson and Saddam Ali against Jesse Vargas. So we will see J-Rock Williams actually headlining that card on Showtime where he's going to be going up here against Marcelo Montano. It's going to be a eliminator for the IBF junior middleweight belt there. So I think this here is going to, if he's able to take that fight, then he'll be, in lines of going up against maybe a current title holder, which is Liam Smith. And I think it'll probably put him in the ranks there above Austin Trout and Demetrius Andrade.
Fun and Andrade
playing? No, with Andrade, I think Andrade had his recent fight. In December? I think it was in December when he last fought. But I'm not sure when his next fight will be. Yeah, because he fought back in October, but I haven't seen anything else in line for Andrade as of yet.
I'm just trying to look through his schedule right now. Oh, yeah, like I said, March 5th, that's going to be right in your backyard. Saddam Ali, like I said, Jesse Vargas, and the great Tony Thompson. Versus Luis Ortiz.
Yeah. And I think some of these other guys that are in the undercard, I think they're probably some local guys too. I was thinking that Lamont Roach. I was looking at Lamont Roach, and I was like, I kind of heard that name around here in this area. So, yeah, he's an area guy too, Lamont Roach is, and they're going to have Zach Ochoa of fighting here in a sixth round fight too. And Ochoa's was in the card earlier. What was it, in 2014? In the DC Armory, I saw him in 2014 in the DC Armory in the undercard for Bernard Hopkins' fight that he had there against Leibu Shumanov. So they'll have a few, yeah. So they'll have a few fights there on that undercard upcoming. So that'll be something to watch there if they'll be able to, you know, had that put together. But I'm kind of like focusing on what's going to happen with Sindhab Ali and Jesse Vargas. I think Ali is going to be able to step up and kind of take that fight against Vargas. I mean, Vargas pretty much got outboxed, I would say, about 10 of the 12 rounds against Timothy Bradley. And if Bradley didn't just have himself, you know, be out in the open against Jesse Vargas to get rocked in the 12th round, it probably would have been like a near shutout victory for Timothy Bradley. And I think Ali has those, you know, type of skills to, you know, defeat the likes of, you know, to defeat the likes of Jesse Vargas. Saddam Ali, I think it was, what was it, in November? I think I saw Saddam Ali back in November 2014 when he faced Luis Carlos Abreu in Atlantic City. Was able to score that TKO victory against him. So, yeah, he's a very good fighter. And that some people were saying that Saddam Ali was a better amateur prospect than Errol Spence was.
Well, I definitely am also picking Saddam Ali in this fight. In the Vargas Bradley fight, it was a solid fight, but I think it was really a matter of class. I don't think Vargas was ready for Bradley, despite the fact that Bradley made some mistakes in that final round. To me, that looked like a A fighter versus a B fighter. I mean, mm-hmm. Vargas never did threaten him in any way, step it up or change up in the fight to produce a different outcome. And just like most fighters, when that announcer goes where they found out that they lost the fight, throws his hands up like totally surprised. Oh, I thought I won that. You know, no, you didn't win that. You didn't win that. You need to sit down and watch the fight without the sound yourself and check it out, you know. But I definitely will. I'm going with Ali in this fight versus Vargas. But we'll see, though. We'll definitely see.
Yeah, true. Just here real quick, we got about 12 minutes left on the live portion of the Boxing Source Radio Show. Y'all could call in to talk boxing live, 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk to live on the show. A couple of things here before we try to get into the overtime period. One of the things that I saw that they kind of like put on BoxRec that is going to eventually happen here, which I still to this day don't understand why they're actually trying to make this fight. Is that on? I really hope this is a joke, but they got on BoxRec that Adrian Broner will be fighting Ashley Theophane for the WBA Super Lightweight Championship, and it is on, and they scheduled it on April 1st. So I am hoping that is a joke. That's not actually happening. That it's not going to be in any type of arena, that no boxing commission is going to approve that fight. Because there is no way that Ashley Theophane should be fighting for no type of belt.
Well, we talked about this fight before. Just sum it up. The power of the name behind you, the power of the promoter behind you. I mean, Like I said, I looked it out from a Theo Vaughn's fight. This guy's a C fighter. But when you got somebody behind you and the name that's behind him, it doesn't get any bigger in the sport than anybody else that's out there. I mean, why Mayweather's pushing this guy, I have no idea. For someone that wants to show, want to show professionalism and class with his name and his product. Yeah, it's a funny. Someone like Mayweather, you would think that just because of the name and the resume that he can produce fighters, not necessarily of the same talent, because he's a talent of this generation. You can't just duplicate that. But you would think that people training under his tutelage, not necessarily from him, but in his camp, you would think that by now he would have produced a top fighter instead of the stuff that we've seen, Ishii Smith and people like that.
Right.
So his reason to get behind Theophane, I have no idea. And it's a shame because, like, Broner was close to him at one point. And they're still close. I know they're still close, but not as close as what they once were, because Broner is just his own man. Of course, he went off and just did what he had to do as far as not training hard, not being focused on Tony on boxing, stuff like that. But you would think that Mayweather could have produced a good fighter, a great fighter by now. But it just really hasn't happened. So I would really like to know why he got behind Theophane and is pushing for this fight.
Well, I mean, I think initially here he has his original base of fighters that he's rolling with. I mean, you have, you know, the Ashley Theophanes, the E.J. Smiths, and the like. But I think he was, you know, he was trying to sign a couple of other guys there. You know, he was backing, you know, somebody like Errol Spence. But I don't necessarily think that, you know, he's there to promote somebody like Errol Spence or anything like that. So he's kind of like working alongside guys like, you know, Al Haymon. But I think there's, you know, he does have, you know, Badu Jack, who is a champion in the super middleweight division. But other guys that are there, you know, like a Jay Leon Love, who's, you know, kind of lost also. But I think there's somebody that may be somebody to watch under Mayweather Promotions is Ladarius Miller. I think Ladarius Miller is a guy that that might be something, a prospect that people might watch out for sooner or later within the promotional company that he has. Ladarius Miller had like an amateur record of 81 wins and 17 losses, and started boxing back in the age of 10. So he may be somebody that people may look at that's within that welterweight division that's coming up, but we'll see how that eventually fills out for Mayweather as a promoter himself. But I think Mayweather is going to be more involved in the management type of deal, you know, alongside Al Haymon, and, you know, probably, like, put money into some of these fight cards that are out there. He might try to, you know, throw in a couple of his fighters in some of these fight cards that are managed by Al Haymon and kind of promoted by other guys because, you know, you still have some of the big wigs that are still out there, the Yvonne Michels, who's the other guys that are out there? Not like Bob Arum or Oscar De La Hoya, but you also have Lou DiBella, who's, you know, really making, you know, still making moves out there in the sport that are putting these actual fight cards together, that are actually making these fights. So I think Mayweather is going to be working more with those guys in order to get his fighters into those cards.
Yeah, that's you're probably right about that because, like I said, the Darius Miller guy, he has a current record of 9-0, one knockout. He's in the welterweight division. So he has a ways to go in order to make him mark. But just going back to the point I was talking about, what would Mayweather's position be in the sport as far as just promoter or just trying to get behind certain fighters and put them and get them on cards. But even one name you brought that's under Mayweather, Jay Leon Love, at some point in time, he showed some promise. He really showed some promise.
Yeah.
You know, and then until he got, I think he got knocked out, I believe it was, or something like that. And he just really kind of, he didn't go to the bottom, but that promise that he showed, he lost all of that when he got took that knockout loss. He lost all of that.
Right.
And he's like, man. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I'm from Michigan, so just like he is. So I was really proud of that moment when he got to, when he actually once again shown that promise. And he got knocked out,
mm-hmm.
He lost all that, you know. And privately, how did Mayweather feel about that? Because you spent time, this guy spent personal time around you, learned from your father, your uncle, whoever else, your team, and then had a big setback like that. So stuff like that probably taught Mayweather, you know what, I don't want to have no parts of my fighters getting knocked down and getting tossed around like that. So maybe that, I don't know, got him away from the thought of the notion of being a promoter per se, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think he, kind of like took a back seat after all of that when he, you know, because I think he really put a good amount of, time trying to put a guy like JB on Love, you know, in the forefront. And, you know, he had other guys that probably had more promise, but not enough notoriety at the time. So I think that's what he was doing with, J. Leon and also with, a guy like, and also, you know, the other guys that he's had under his banner, too. So I think that's probably going to change over the course of this year when he probably gets, you know, other fighters within there and other things like that. So that's going to be something to watch out for. One thing before we transition to overtime, we've kind of like seen a couple of hints that this fight is going to happen. But it wouldn't be, you know, all too certain until the month of September or the month of October. And one is because it's going to be in the welterweight division, and it's going to involve two veterans, one that hasn't really fought in a while, and the other that, you know, fought, you know, last year but was in another weight class, and that is a potential fight between Miguel Cotto and Juan Manuel Marquez. The talks have started to try to get this fight put together. Like I said, Marquez really hasn't fought in a while, so it's kind of, you know, up in the air as to see if he's actually going to be ready for this fight. But on the flip side, you have Miguel Cotto, who was a, like I said, a former WBC middleweight champion that won that middleweight championship while he was around 153, pretty much 153 pounds when he won it against Sergio Martinez. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see if Cotto was able to put himself back down to that 147-pound limit, see if he'll make that. So what do you think about that potential fight happening?
It's an intriguing matchup. A couple points in that. Cotto would easily be the bigger man. I mean, not that saying Cotto would be towering over Marquez, but, of course, Marquez never fought that high. A couple of points, like I said, with that said, Marquez is making a stipulation already, the fact that after the weigh-in that Cotto cannot rise above 150, 153, basically 152, 153. He don't want him to be over that weight come time for fight. So he won't be at too much of a significant disadvantage, which is certainly understandable. But at the same time, Roach made a statement out there, too, that he's not sure if Cotto can squeeze down to 147, which is kind of, I'm like, really? I mean, Cotto's, he's been saying he's a middleweight fighting at a catch weight of 154, and you tell me he can't lose 7 pounds to get down to 147? That doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense. I mean, it's an interesting fight. I would love to. I guess I would love to see it. Simply because of the Mexican Puerto Rican rivalry, and two, because of the names, and to see what Marquez has left. He said he wants to fight twice this year. He's been rehabbing from knee injuries and stuff like that. So at the same time, this guy should not fight right now if his knees are not right. I mean, look at when Cotto fought Sergio Martinez. Martinez had major knee trouble, and we see what happened in that fight. Cotto just lit him up in that fight. So why would you want to come into a fight, a boxing match, which is full of lateral movement from side to side, and you have knee issues? You're going to be a sitting target, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And being that Cotto becoming the bigger man, the stronger man, per se, I mean, with Marquez's grit, he's going to stand there and probably fight. And that could be a bad thing for him in this particular fight. So,
Those knee issues continue to linger and actually, you know, go through that fight, that would, that would extremely limit Marquez's ability to maneuver around Miguel Cotto, or somebody, you know, with the likes of Cotto, who likes to work on the body early. That would pose like a big issue for Marquez if they are able to fight and he still has those type of issues lingering in that fight. Marquez is, you know, well-known counter-puncher. So, I mean, he'll be looking to see what Miguel Cotto is going to do early in the fight and kind of make adjustments as, you know, he probably will have Nacho Bear staying in his corner to be, you know, his trainer, while Freddie Roach will be the trainer of Miguel Cotto in this fight. So I think Nacho Bearstein kind of has, you know, the background to see what Freddie Roach does as far as, like, coaching his fighters. So that's probably going to be another story within this potential matchup that we have between Cotto and Marquez, is that you have the two trainers that have, you know, been on opposite ends of the spectrum for the past couple of fights or so. So I'd like to see how, if they're able to make this happen, it would be something to see if they're able to get Miguel Cotto, you know, down 7 pounds or so to make the fight happen. But if they actually have it signed, then we'll probably, you know, get into it a little bit more later on. All right, we're about 3 minutes into overtime right now, so I guess we have like a couple of, you know, off topics to kind of like speak about going on in the sport of boxing. So is there anything that you would like to touch on?
No, it's not a terrible lot of things on the immediate horizon right now. Right now it's just kind of in a sense of a holding phase for boxing right now as we prepare for some decent fights in the up and coming months and everything. So nothing in particular right now.
We kind of like getting into, you know, those things with all of the fights that we were speaking about, like the Quig Frampton and the announcement of you know, Martin and Joshua. It's pretty much the main focus of this week, in that, you know, we had like Chocolatito Gonzalez going up there on the undercard of Golovkin's fight with Dominic Wade. So we see what's going on with that. And I would say that in the next couple of weeks here, we're probably going to get a little bit more into that Quig Frampton deal and probably see if there's any other news that are, you know, happening there for those particular fights that are coming up. Like I said, Golovkin, Wade, Pacquiao, Bradley, and so on. So I think with that being said, I think we probably could close out the show and get back into it next week. Like I said, y'all be sure to catch the sister shows that come up every Tuesday night with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports at 8:30 p.m. with the Execution Matthew Long, and we have the CMT Firestone Football Talk Show Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. And we also have a new show, Beyond the Commentary, with Kevin Kress, that's on Thursday. So we pretty much have almost a full week of shows here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel there. So, folks, with that being said, we're pretty much going to close out the Boxing and Sports Radio Show here. And like I said, at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit, not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, folks, I am gone.